So finally, we're all in agreement about what's going on with the adults. Milhouse? Okay, here's what we've got. The Rand Corporation, in conjunction with the Saucer People.
Thank you.
Under the supervision of the Reverse Vampires, are forcing our parents to go to bed early in a fiendish plot to eliminate the meal of dinner. We're through the looking glass here, people.
The Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast is Canada's number one export. From the Rain City in the great Canadian Pacific Northwest, I bid you all a good evening, a good afternoon, or a good morning. Whatever it may be, wherever you are across this great land of ours and beyond, the Tahitian and the Hawaiian Islands out west, east into the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the North Pole, we are coast to coast on the internet, on your podcast dial. My name is not Art Bell, it is Sock Jig, and this is the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. But I will be playing the part of Sneaker Art Bell today. And that is why Giorgio Moroder is playing, because we will be talking about sneaker conspiracy theories today. So I'll be breaking it down based on what we know and what we don't know we know, you know? So, but what I really mean is I will be approaching this from a truth perspective and not from a batshit insane conspiracy perspective. So you're not going to see me rant and go on about this kind of stuff. That's not me. I'm not a rant guy. But I will be breaking it down, and I will be saying what we know, what is true, what is not true. A lot of the times you'll see that things can be like half true, and that's kind of where conspiracy theories start. That's where you can take something that's half true and blow it up to something way more serious. But I do slip in some stuff that I heard that people have told me over time, and I'll leave it up to you to figure out which ones those are. Some of them are things that I wouldn't say otherwise on the show, but the premise of the show kind of makes it so I can just kind of blend it all together. This is a safe space. If you say things are a safe space, you can say kind of whatever you want. That's what I've heard. I will also be talking about Zeta Kicks. I will talk about that separately because he is kind of his own vortex of conspiracies. Talking about who, what, where, why, all that kind of stuff, and take some educated guesses. I also wanted to say thank you to everybody who grabbed the code from the last podcast and bought the Terminal Gray Pink Salt socks. Most of that stock went to actual podcast listeners, almost 80% of the stock. And it's pretty amazing because I dropped the code without that much hinting about 1 hour into a 90-minute show. So that means people did listen that far and did go out of their way and did buy the sock. So I really appreciate that. I mentioned on Twitter the actual, you know, the ratio of people buying is actually super high. It's like 17% of listeners bought socks, which is amazing. Like I said, salespeople will think like 2% or 4% is amazing, but 17% is really out of this world. So thank you very much. You know, this format of dropping it on the pod, I think really works well. So stay tuned for more. And, you know, if you like me, you like this podcast, the best way to support is to buy those socks when they drop. You know, I don't want to do ads for other companies when I can put over my own product. So, and I like this model over a Patreon where you get something, you can wear it. And I appreciate that it's not possible for everyone to buy every single sock every time they drop for any number of reasons. Like you might not like gray or pink, or you might think that the buy low, sell high thing is dumb. So I get it. Everything won't be for you all the time. But you can always like or retweet tweets when they drop or just tell people to listen to the show. You know, this show is unique. It's not like other sneaker podcasts. You know, it's easier to stand out when you're doing something that other people are not. But it's also even easier when your natural tendency is to not do things that other people are doing. This is probably one of the densest sneaker podcasts out there. Dense meaning, you know, super compacted with sneaker talk only and no banter, and not meaning dumb. But, you know, I like it that way. And I get to do random stuff that I want to do, like, you know, a State of the Union themed episode or this Art Bell intro, which, you know, maybe like five people popped for. So when socks are available, if there's one you like, I appreciate if you could purchase and support me. And I will be adjusting stock this year, making it a little bit more available if you've missed out in the past. Also, there will be Mr. Brightside related ones coming soon as well. So before we kick off the main conspiracy part, I want to talk about what's on feet, pickups, skips, and misses. On feet recently, I've been wearing the Cactus Plant Flea Market Air Force One, the Nike ID ones. It's an all white one with a red flea on it. Those are one of my favorite pairs. My buddies in Showers Gang gifted those for me for my birthday, so I love breaking those ones out every once in a while. I've been wearing various New Balance 2002Rs, the two Salehi shoes, and I've also been wearing the Fragment Travis Jordan 1 Lows. Pickups. I haven't really updated pickups in the last two episodes because I did an interview one, and then last time was a themed episode. But overall this year, January, February is pretty slow. You know, bought some stuff here and there. But I was on an L streak for a while, and then it wasn't really until I hit the Supreme Dunk Brazil SB using just Apple Pay. So that was like my first hit. But then really it kind of broke down the dam and it came, flooded in March here. I picked up some of these Air Trainer ones that came out, both the wheat one and the smoke gray ones. And luckily those sat a little bit. They were easy to get, even in bigger sizes. Bigger sizes usually go because that is a big man shoe. I got a bunch of Air Jordan 1s. Some I got recently too, like the dark blue Marina, I guess it's called. And I also got a Gore-Tex one because it rains a lot here in Vancouver. And I also picked up the Brotherhood ones that dropped late here in Canada on Foot Locker Canada. And those are surprisingly just sitting on Foot Locker site. You could just add to cart and buy later. I bought like an hour after the drop. So it seems like there is a certain downswing in demand for some of these shittier color Jordan ones. Of course, something like, the patent bread ones also released and those flew. I didn't hit on the Union Dunk Pistachio, but a friend helped me out and said he got my size. So I appreciate the lookout. Thank you very much. So I have those in hand now and they're better than expected, but they're not like, you know, surefire hits or anything, but I do like, you know, the idea of how they took Japan or Europe releases and kind of brought them back with a twist. You know, when your voice goes really high describing something, that means it kind of sucks. You know, it's a good shoe. It's nice. It's not bad. All right, I might cut that part. I also picked up the Essence New Balance 2002R, the Essence exclusive one that just randomly appeared one day. You know, these are the type of shoes where you can't really prepare for. No one has any idea they're coming, and then one day they're just online. And so you have to think in that moment, do I just buy now, cop now, think later? And that's usually how I do it, especially if there's on a site where free returns like Essence. So I have those. I like them in hand. I haven't worn them yet. The Concepts Air Max 1s, I also did get all three of those as well, too. And I did get some help with those. Same friend helped me out with the first two because I was not online that day when those released. So I was driving. So I appreciate the hookup there. I kind of like how they did the drop formula for these where, the first one went everywhere, boutiques, sneakers, Concepts. And then the second one was stores only and Concepts, no sneakers. And then the third one was Concepts only, like online and in store. I thought that was a really solid way of doing that release and making it so people could hit. I also got the Air Max 1 Skunk and the Blueprint. I got them like a day or so early. And that was just from one of these sites that I'm a VIP on. And that's VIP with my government name, not with my gimmick name. On the Confirmed app, I was able to hit, you know, on Confirmed app, either you hit everything or you hit nothing. So I'm lucky enough to be in that one where I do hit most of them, but not all of them. So I hit foam runners, I hit slides, I hit wave runners, and I even hit this knit runner. But I missed out on like Oreo 350s and the Bone 350s. I'm glad to have another wave runner as a backup to the one that I already had. So, you know, as I was making this list, I was like, shit, that's a lot of sneakers. I'm supposed to be, selling off some sneakers. So I have been selling off a bunch of my sneakers, and I'll probably do that update next time about what I've sold off and kind of the next steps in kind of lowering my collection. But that is probably why I did spend a lot on this stuff, because the money was sitting in PayPal. You know, some skips and misses. I skipped out on Rebellion Air 1s. You know, if there was an easy raffle to enter, I did that, but I wasn't, you know, actively trying to buy them to wear. Same with the Drake Hot Step shoe. Other misses, I can't hit a Panda Dunk. You know, I don't have access to the Nike app or the sneakers app. And they do restock in store here, but I stay away from the stores. Same, missed out on the Georgetown 85s. I've never had an 85. Jordan 1 is, like I said, probably one of the harder shoes to get, you know, unless it's like a Brotherhood 1 or something like that, or Gore-Tex where no one wants it. I missed out on the Jown 990 V3, but I went on GOAT right away and bought it, and that was available on GOAT Instant Ship and went right into my storage. So those are still sitting in my storage, and I'm going to, you know, collect a bunch and then ship them to myself. So I don't have those in hand. Other ones, you know, Clot Dunks, because it's clot only, size 12 is rare, so I missed on those. And Cardinal 3s is another one I missed out on that I really wanted, but it seems to be restocking, and the resale price is, you know, low enough where I might pick it up, but you know, I picked up enough shoes recently. All right, the main topic for this episode are sneaker conspiracies. You know, I went through the various sneaker conspiracies based on what I've tweeted, based on what I've heard, and just collected them all together and made a list. Then as I was going through the list, I was like, okay, I need a way to kind of break this down here, because, you know, there's a fine line between hot takes and conspiracies. So, you know, the actual definition of a conspiracy is like, you know, the belief that certain events are being secretly manipulated behind the scenes by multiple forces, and with, of course, like, you know, a negative intent for everyone. So, but the key thing there is some sort of collusion between multiple entities. So I was looking at these lists, I made the list, and as I was looking through them, I was reminded of the Donald Rumsfeld quote when he talks about what we know and what we don't know. And he had this quote when he was talking about the lack of evidence linking Iraq government and, you know, the supply of weapons of mass destruction. He talked about known knowns and known unknowns. So I'll play the clip here just for context.
Reports that say that something hasn't happened are always interesting to me, because as we know, there are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know.
You know, this is a very famous quote, and it was mocked at the time because, it's, you know, obviously it's a play on words and kind of easy to get mixed up in. But it really is like an analysis technique that's used by national security. The technical name is called the Johari window, where you kind of divide things up into quadrants and of what you know and what you don't know. And it's used to kind of better understand relationships with themselves and others. And I bring it up because it's used a lot in project management circles. It actually is a legitimate technique on kind of, you know, verifying where your blind spots are. There's actually a documentary about, you know, this quote and Donald Rumsfeld called The Known Unknown by Errol Morris. It's really good. It came out in like 2013 or so. So check that out if you want to know more. So I'm going to use this technique to kind of classify the various sneaker conspiracy theories that I've heard. And, you know, it might get a little confusing saying the words known unknown and unknown knowns and things like that. So I'm just going to simplify it a little bit. You know, instead of a quadrant, I'm gonna say what we know and what we don't know. So that's how I'm kind of classifying these things. And then, you know, I'll break it down in between in those sections as well. And the approach that I'm taking is I'm going to focus on the ones that have a kernel of truth that I think are more likely to be real, but we do not know the exact details on. But there's definitely a whole list of things that are probably not true, but are at least entertaining. So in this case, you can make up really any wild shit as long as it makes a good story or at least a good tweet. You know, sometimes it can be fun, but sometimes it can get pretty dark. So, you know, the idea for this episode actually came from when I joked that brands are only really into NFTs with the ultimate goal of selling us branded tracksuits. Some other fun ones that I'm pretty sure are not true, but they're entertaining, that, you know, Kyrie Irving is a member of the Illuminati because he had the third eye on some of his sneakers. Another good one is that mood board accounts are paid by New Balance. You know, someone's got to pay for all those plants and big pants. One I saw on Reddit that made me laugh was that the Wear Your Kicks movement was actually started by resellers to get dead stock shoes off the market. That's a pretty good hot take. And, you know, Joe Rogan had one where on his show he was talking about off-white sneakers and the zip tag. But he said it's actually a conspiracy to make kids dumb, which is a fine enough hot take. But this is what he said on his show. He said, they're making you soft and stupid. This is probably a plot by the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians to make sure our kids grow dumber and dumber. This is one of those things probably started off on Instagram by one of those internet research agencies. You know, that's a good example of where I'm going to approach this sneaker conspiracy theories episode more on truth and not on this kind of, you know, Joe Rogan started by the Chinese and internet research agency kind of angle. Someone who's, you know, way crazier than me is free to do the full-on batshit crazy version of this podcast. Okay, for the first part is the facts section. And these are things that we do know for the most part. You know, there might be details where we don't know. Most of this part, everyone kind of agree on that the info is out there and it's probably true. The first one, where did all the Trophy Room Air Jordan 1s go? We know that they went out the back door, allegedly. You can check out my episode 12 on this topic where I talk about exactly what happened, allegedly. If you haven't listened to any of the older episodes. Another one along the same lines was the Joe West guy and his mom were taking stock from sneakers and giving it to her son. You know, we are pretty sure that that is not what was happening, that she was not taking stock from sneakers. But what was happening was that he was getting access to the employee store. You know, but for the most part, Nike was aware that their VP's son was a reseller, even though employees and their family can't resell. You know, and if I was aware his mom worked at Nike, you know, I didn't know exactly what she did or anything like that, that she was that high up. But if I was aware of that, then surely others did. But, you know, it wasn't those people that outed him. It was himself. So all this was covered also in an episode, episode 13 of this podcast. Another conspiracy theory that is probably true, that brands like resale price. You know, I'm being facetious there. They don't like that their shoes are resale, but a probably more accurate version of this is that they monitor the resale price of their shoes. I've mentioned before the Grandino dude who knew at New Balance, who's head of collabs. He admitted this on the Complex podcast episode. And just this week, Wex did an interview with Complex where he is leaving Shopify to go work at Fanatics. And he was talking about how Josh Looper, ex of StockX, now also works at Fanatics. And he said, Josh and I have known each other for a while, interacted quite a bit through his StockX days, just kind of getting access to resale data and stuff like that. So this might be a very innocent quote. It might be just wants to resell data on a list of sneakers and they can, you know, go to the site and scrape that data themselves. Or they can ask their contact there for a spreadsheet with all the same data, you know, or it might not be innocent at all. So, you know, we'll get to the link between StockX and these brands and stuff like that later on. But what I can assure you is that these brands do really monitor their resale price and even have it as a KPI, a key performance indicator for the product, to mark if it's a success or not. Since we're still in the facts section, the other one that we do know is that that stock information is leaked by brands or retail insiders to cook groups. This stuff is not available in an API. It's usually someone has this information, they work at these brands or retailers, and they sell this information. For a long time, we couldn't get any Nike stock information, but now you see on Twitter that there's, you know, sneakers leakers, and I think Cash Monitors has almost always a size info and stock breakdown. How accurate they are, I do not know. Sometimes they seem to be accurate, sometimes not so much. And that could be, you know, brands pulling stock, adding stock, moving it around. Or it could be these people making it up. I don't know. But it's accurate enough most of the time where that if you're listening to this, you can probably agree that it is leaked by brands or retailers themselves, allegedly. Another one along the same lines that I can probably debunk a little bit is these drops where the domain changes and how sometimes certain cook groups will have the early domain before the drop itself. For this Union Dunks, the two that dropped, the Lakers and the bluish one that dropped recently, the URL for that one was out maybe like five, six minutes before the drop, but I didn't exactly trust it because just before that, Concepts had done their third Air Max 1 drop and they actually made a decoy site. And so for the Union Dunks that dropped, I was like, I'm just going to ignore this early URL. It could be a decoy and I'm just going to go on the official site. It turned out that wasn't a decoy, that was the real one that leaked early. And that might be why, you know, everyone and their bot already pointed at that domain and were already instantly in queue, and that's why the queue was 35 minutes instead of 5-6 minutes. But how they detect that? So for Shopify, everyone has a myshopify.com version of their store address. For example, my store address is shop.sockjig.com, but the My Shopify version is sockjig.myshopify.com. And really that My Shopify version just points to your real store address. So it seems like mostly sites that have done these kind of domain change URLs changes before either have their main one that they don't touch, and then they have their secondary one, and then the secondary one always points to a new domain. And so everyone just sniffs what that myshopify.com URL is, and then that's how they get it. So if that was technical and you didn't understand a word I said, that's all right. Basically, they're sniffing the redirect before the drop happens. On Concepts, it's possible they made an entirely new one, so no one was able to get it. You know, and then in that case, they can either just guess it, like because there's some sort of pattern between the three Air Max 1 Concepts drops, or, you know, maybe there's a site where you can search for recently registered domains. Or it's leaked. You know, someone has this info and they can sell it and make money off it. You know, the game is the game. What am I going to say about that? So we dealt with what we do know, the facts part. That was in the Rumsfeld version, that was the known knowns part. The second half of what we do know are things that we don't know, but somebody does and they're not telling. You know, the Rumsfeld version of this are unknown knowns. Since we're still in the facts section, these are still knowns. We know that we don't know. But somebody does. Have I lost you yet? All right, I'll try to get you back. You know, the two easy ones for this are raffles legit? The answer is depends. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. Do stores backdoor? Some stores do, some don't. Actually, do stores backdoor can probably go in the facts section because the answer is yes. But really, like, they don't backdoor every single release all the time. So are stores themselves selling on StockX directly? Directly, I would say the answer is no. Indirectly, I would say the answer is yes. You know, Nike probably has policies on this. You know, you don't want to risk your contract at a time where Nike is going to DTC, getting caught doing this kind of stuff. So if they did this kind of stuff, it would be kind of off the books. If I was a store owner, I would give hype shoes to my employees at, you know, the wholesale or wholesale plus 20 or whatever price, cheap price, and say, hey, go and sell these on wherever you can and make your money. And that is kind of considered your bonus pay. A recent example of this is the Yeezy Quantum Carbon Mono, which is set to release on April 7th for retail price of $260. I'm recording this on the weekend of April 2nd, April 3rd. But if you looked on GOAT or StockX, you would see that almost every size is available for $195. And I would bet if you purchase them on GOAT specifically, they would most likely ship instantly to you. Or if you put them in your GOAT storage, you would see that they would appear instantly in GOAT storage. That means that those shoes are in hand at a GOAT warehouse or with a trusted partner of GOAT. So how are those shoes available there? Does it come from the brands directly? Is Adidas just handing them over to GOAT? Is it certain retailers? They know that the shoe's a brick. Let's just get it out there. You know, if the wholesale price is generally half price of retail, so half of 260 is 130. So if they sell for at 195, you know, maybe they can make some money. So like I said, I don't know what happens there, how exactly that is going on, but someone out there does, and they're probably listening to this podcast right now. Because retailers do not want to have this direct association, they most likely use some sort of third party. This is often referred to as 3PL, as third-party logistics, where it's like, hey, I have a whole bunch of stuff, just take it, warehouse it, and get rid of it for me. But also these third parties can help out brands or boutiques directly, especially if you're just a clothing company and you don't want to deal with warehousing and shipping and stuff. You can partner with a 3PL and they'll do all that stuff. That's what they do, the third-party logistics. For example, Kith uses Bergen Logistics, and if you ever got a shipment from Kith and you saw that on the address tag, that's what's happening there. But for this conspiracy theory episode, what we really want to know is, are they just partnering and it's all above the board, or is there a deeper connection? So that leads to the next point, which is about GOAT specifically and 1661 Inc. and third-party logistics, and about the Jound 990 V3 shoe that I bought. So before the retail drop, all these Jound shoes were available on GOAT for around $385. I saw the price, I saw it was pretty good, but you know, I like to at least try for retail first, and I think a lot of people do. You'll often see the resale price of a shoe jump up after, because that is people who thought, hey, let me try retail, and then just say, fuck it, I'm gonna pay resale. So I was monitoring the shoe on GOAT. I saw my size was still $385, but I saw a lot of the key sizes for New Balance, like 8.5 to 9.5, were sold out first at that $385 price. So they were available for $450 or so. This could have been buyers who, you know, bought the shoe, put it in storage, and then immediately relisted it at a higher cost. So the retail drop came, I missed the shoe, and I just went on GOAT right away and I bought it and put it in storage. I just paid the $385 regular. I also saw that the $411 instant ship price, but I figured I'll take the chance. It looks like this is probably a retailer listing this shoe, and so it will go directly to my storage account. The risk that I'm talking about there is if it was an actual person selling it, they could cancel the sale when the price of the shoe skyrockets, where if some third party is listing all these shoes, there is no one canceling. It just goes immediately into your locker. So where did these pairs come from? You know, I've said retailer and third party, but you know, the only person that's dropped so far is Jound. I know there was supposed to be a possible retail release later, but there hasn't been anything yet. So most likely it was probably Jound themselves, but we'll get to that part. So I missed the shoe on retail, but a friend of mine did buy the shoe, and he lives here in Canada, and he was choked because he said, hey, I just got my shipping for my shoe, and it's coming from California and not from Montreal, where Jound is based. That is a key thing for Canadians, because that means if it's coming from Montreal, you're not going to have to pay any duties. But if it's shipping from the US, you might have to pay an extra $100 or $200 or whatever. So if you purchase from Jound retail site and you got shipping and it came from Fontana, you would have seen on the label that it came from 1661 Inc., which is a third party logistics, which is also GOAT. 1661 Inc. is GOAT Group. If you're on the West Coast and you've ever sold a shoe on GOAT, you would see that either it goes to Carson City or it goes to Fontana. And the address is almost always 1661 Inc., the exact same address that shipped the Jound retail pairs. You know, thank you to my guy Void Sneaks on Twitter. He posted screenshots of this, and in his story, he bought the shoe on the retail site and then he sold it on GOAT. And then that's when he noticed that it went to the same address. So what I'm saying here is that GOAT is both a resale platform and a third-party logistics company. Maybe I'm wrong, and there's actually another shadow party involved here, but I'm just kind of going by evidence seen just from this Jound release. Of course, the conspiracy here is that brands like Jound can partner directly with resale platform like GOAT, because GOAT does this 3PL stuff. You know, it's essentially backdoor by another name, 3PL. Maybe Jound set the early market price at $385 because that's what they were happy with. They didn't want to judge the market and take the chance that if they listed at $550, not enough shoes would sell before the retail drop, which is probably what the current market price is. It's kind of take what you can get and get out. But you know, what is the stock allocation for something like this? No one really knows other than Jound and 1661 Inc. Is it 50% of the shoes went to retail, 50% went to GOAT? Or what if it was 80-20? You know, 80% went to the resale and 20% for retail drop. You know, it would actually save some resellers some time if right at the checkout, you had an option where you can just say, put this into my GOAT storage. And it would instantly appear on your GOAT account, even though you're checking out for retail price on a brand's retail site. You know, I think this works well for smaller brands, hype brands like Jound. If someone had a Nike collab, it probably wouldn't work. Nike would probably put their foot down on stuff like this, unless your name is, you know, Marcus. But if, you know, small hype brands can partner with 1661 Inc. for 3PL, why can't Nike themselves? And if there's too much evidence in Fontana, then how about in Hong Kong Goat Warehouse, where it's kind of off the radar, at least here in North America. But for this drop, for Jound, for New Balance, it fit just right. It was very on-brand for them. And if you look through Goat quite a bit, you see it happen for the Carbon Mono Quantum, and it happens for several other shoes. This is definitely not the first one and won't be the last. Okay, we're switching to the other side now, the unknown part. And, you know, if you're listening this far, you're probably thinking, where are the real conspiracies? So this is the real conspiracy section for this topic. The Rumsfeld version is called the known unknowns. That means these are things that you know that you don't know you know. Did you get all that? Basically, I'm saying this is probably the conspiracy portion. These are things that are probably true. That's why I've classified these ones that are at least a version of it is true, but I don't know exactly which version and how much it goes. And as you might imagine, this part does involve Nike and StockX and Goat and the connections like that. So I have some thoughts here. I'll break them down and then you can kind of make your own conclusions. But first, probably not true. This probably should go in the facts section, but I thought I'd mention it here. There's sometimes a conspiracy that resellers control the market of a shoe. That means they can buy up a shoe, get the price super high, and generate hype for it. And really, they can do all that, but it's not true. They can't manufacture demand. People wearing the shoe is what manufacturers demand, and that is ultimately what controls the resale price. Resellers can buy up every single Yeezy 380 on the market, have a giant warehouse of them, but that's not going to make people want to wear it. But just like in any good conspiracy, there's enough there where, you know, there's enough people flexing and showing stacks of it that you can latch onto it and say that that is true. Like I used 380s as an example, but what if someone had stacks and stacks of Nike Dunks and someone's going to say, hey, there's only hype for this because resellers control the market. And that's not true. There's hype for it because every girl, every guy wants to wear a black and white Panda Dunk. Even I want to wear one. A recent example of this is people were complaining about the Oreo 350 resale price, that it's way too low, that it's, you know, reselling for $300 or whatever it is. And because it was one of the first 350 V2s to drop, that it should really be going for $400+. And most stock was on Yeezy supply. And there was only really one bot that worked exceptionally well, and that was Valor. So there were people out there blaming Valor users for the price being too low because they got too many pairs and then they couldn't sell them, so they dropped the price. You know, I'm not a Valor user. I don't know these resellers en masse are panicking and dropping the price, but really it's buyers who want to wear the shoe is what ultimately controls the price. So if people were not buying at $400, people were dropping the price to a price that they would buy at. Okay, for Nike conspiracies, the first one I have is Nike's ultimate direct-to-consumer goal is to get rid of every other retailer. Obviously, they've said that this is not true, but how they act is kind of more telling than what they say. So they've gotten rid of mom and pops. They're slowly reducing Foot Locker. Can they get rid of everyone? You know, maybe they can. Maybe they can get rid of everyone except, you know, the Undefeateds and the Kiths and Livestock, and every second tier, third tier shop can go by the wayside. But really, when you think about it, it doesn't really make that much business sense. You know, this type of hype sneaker interest is dictated by what people actually wear and looking fresh in the streets. So ultimately, that means if people can't get the shoes in hand to wear right away, they're not looking fresh in the streets, then the interest goes down. And really, you will see consignment shops kind of filling that void. And really, consignment shops are springing up everywhere in places you wouldn't expect, like in malls and stuff like that. So maybe they already are filling that void. Nike is, of course, well aware of this. They have no plans to drop these kind of neighborhood drops, as they've been calling it. And that's what that whole Rebellion Air shoe was all about, was about the in-store experience, because they weren't on sneakers. You know, it's actually interesting that they've nicknamed that NBHD, and I know Neighborhood in Japan has used that as well, so it's interesting to see that maybe Neighborhood Japan didn't copyright or trademark that. Another good conspiracy theory: Nike skimps on quality on some releases so they can retro it later with better quality materials. Again, this is most likely untrue. No one's got, you know, a big presentation that says we're going to make this shoe with shitty material. But I don't know. You see some of these old Jordan retro releases, there was a certain era where the quality was, everything was bad. So maybe a version of this is true. But really, the modern version of this is these, you know, this reimagined sneakers. You know, instead of a band one, we'll do this Rebellion Air version and, you know, the patent version and stuff like that. All right, let's get on to some of the better conspiracies. You know, if you find me saying I don't know in this section, it's because that's basically the title of the section. I know that I don't know. Of course, one of the bigger conspiracies is that Nike is intentionally restricting stock on sneakers and reselling it directly to StockX. Like any good conspiracy theory, there's enough there where you can say, hey, that would explain a lot why I can't get anything. And then when stuff like, you know, that Wex quote comes out that Adidas was working with StockX, like I said, that could be as simple as a report, or it could be something more. And that's why we just do not know. I don't think anyone's doing this. I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think it's very sustainable. So it's probably not true, but makes a good conspiracy theory. Okay, another good one. Because Foot Locker bought out GOAT, Foot Locker is directly sending pairs to GOAT. This is one of those ones where it's like, yeah, that is probably happening. Hold on, let me say allegedly. Allegedly. But I do not know. I've not seen any evidence of this. I've not seen people speaking out. I haven't seen, you know, a former ex-employee come out and say, oh yeah, we did that all the time. I took pairs directly from the shelf in the back and dropped them off at Flight Club GOAT. We talked about 1661 Inc. and the Jound release and how there was evidence of all that. But in this case, with Foot Locker and GOAT, I haven't seen any evidence. Maybe other people have. You know, one of the things I do know, one of the guys from Foot Locker, an executive vice president, Scott Martin, is on the board of governors for 1661 Inc., but it's not exactly like board of governors have executive power. So really, it probably means nothing, but since this is the sneaker conspiracy episode, we can speculate that it is a conspiracy, and they're just covering it up better. There's also some really solid StockX ones. Some are pretty, you know, benign or whatever. One could be that, you know, StockX authenticators have a certain quota that they have to hit. They have to deny a certain number of shoes per day. And this is one of the ones where, you know, someone who works there can probably answer, but I don't work there, so I don't know. You know, another conspiracy theory is StockX and the fake sales history that appears in the sales. They've said before that they show sales from eBay and other consignment stores. And even Josh Luber himself, when he was still the CEO or whatever, is in my replies years ago saying that they stopped doing this. But sometimes in the text and in the help, it'll still say that they do it. It could be them just wanting to show history on certain shoes at a certain price. It could be that is just someone from a different country bought the shoe. And then when you add in currencies and duties and stuff, it looks inflated. So this is an example where, say, Patent One bread is selling at 400 US, and then you see the history that someone sold one for 550. Well, why did mine not sell when I have mine listed at 400? So that's what I mean, where either it came from somewhere else, or it's someone that, you know, bought from a different country and it's adding up the currency or duty. Or, of course, conspiracy is StockX is just faking this data themselves. Another good StockX conspiracy theory is that StockX keeps certain shoes for themselves or for VIPs. An example of this is, say a sneaker comes in, something, you know, pretty rare, like OG Off-White Prestos or, you know, MCA, Air Force One, Off-White or something. And say there's an issue that there's a tear on the side of the box only. The rest of the shoe is perfect, all the laces are in there, everything like that. And these days, especially, a shoe like that doesn't probably come in as often as it did in 2017. So StockX could say, hey, this sale goes through for the seller, so they get their payout. But for the buyer, they can say, hey, we got a broken box and we'll try to locate you a new one. And you take that shoe, you put it on the shelf for the VIPs. Now you got an OG Off-White Presto for your VIP Cleveland Cavs event. I, of course, have no evidence of this, so I don't know if it actually happens. But if I can imagine it, that means that it could happen. Another one I think makes a lot of sense is these apps, and I'm using StockX here, but I guess it could be GOAT as well too, that they use AI or reports to figure out what shoes are hot and then buys them up at retail. If not at retail, they buy it off their own app. The reason why I think this could definitely happen is because that report is easy to write. I could write that report. They have access to Scout app, which has a whole bunch of resellers using it and uploading exactly what shoes they are selling right now and for how much. You know, you can take it from a shoe that's really hot, like, you know, that Puma LaMelo shoe, and see that it's trending up, but it's still for the most part low. So they could buy it up on their own app if they consider the market price of it currently too low and have forecasted it to be higher pretty soon. But really, it's probably easier for StockX to just be the platform, skim money off every single sale, and not have to have, you know, subject matter experts on which shoes are going to pop and stuff like that. But, you know, every big tech company has data scientists and data teams, and I'm pretty sure StockX does have a data team, because why wouldn't they? If they do, why wouldn't they write reports like this? Why wouldn't they write reports about what is undervalued and where the market is going soon? And we've already talked about, you know, possibly brands and retailer insiders selling their information. This stuff could easily be sold as well to cook groups. Another one is, say there's some random old shoe someone listed for super cheap, but the history shows that it's always sold for $800, but someone listed it for $400. But because it's so old, it's from 2015, no one is probably actively looking for it. Well, you can generate something that kind of, you know, alerts you to this kind of stuff and just buy it yourself. The reason why I say this is all probably allegedly true is because those reports, like I said, those reports are easy to write. And just human nature tells you that someone who wants to make money would do that. If they could do that stuff, they probably would. But this is all allegedly. Like I said, this is a safe space for conspiracy theories, so that means you can say whatever you want. Finally, the last quadrant is in the Rumsfeld version is the unknown unknowns. This is what he was talking about in his original quote. This is the part where you can't even think of it, because if you could think of it, it would be in the other part and it'd be listed. It's all just like, who would have thought that could happen? And there might be people listening who, like I said, work at StockX, work at a retailer, work at a brand that know things that I have not mentioned yet. And this is the part where I was saying where this analysis is useful, just because you can classify things in the other quadrant, but you can't exactly classify what you don't know that you don't know in this section. Do I still have you? So because this is the unknown unknowns part, that means I don't know and this section is blank. The truth is out there. All right, the final segment is about Zeta Kicks, and I'm assuming I'm saying that right because I've never said it out loud before right now. But first, a disclaimer. I want to say clearly that this is not going to be an endorsement, nor is it going to be a takedown of him. This only really came up because he offered these Chicago One Reimagined at a pretty decent price, and lots of people bought up. So I figured it is safe to comment on, because a lot of people were asking if he's legit. Who is he? You know, where does he get his shoes from? And why does he do all this? So that is what I will try to answer in this segment from what I know or I've heard. But I want to make a disclaimer that I do not know for sure. I'm going to make educated guesses here. But really, that's what I say. I'm not trying to take him down. I'm also not, you know, counting someone else's pockets or how much money he makes. I'm not really the clutching the pearls types that's going to go on long screeds about scalpers. If you know me and listen to this podcast, I just tap the sign that says the game is the game. So if he's making money, more power to him. I really don't care how much he makes or why he does what he does. But for the purposes of this sneaker conspiracy podcast, I feel like I got to talk about it. So it's only here to talk about this kind of stuff that this podcast can do. You know, I'm not out here interviewing Victor Cruz for the third time, you know, asking him, you know, tell me more about your collab with Pierre Cardin or whatever. Anyways, like I said, Zeta Kicks, he's responsible for what he sells on his site, not me. And if you order from him, you are responsible for your own decision, not me. So that is my disclaimer for this entire segment. Okay, to break this all down, I'm going to go a much simpler route than a Johari window like the last one. I'm just going to go, you know, who, what, where, why, that kind of stuff. So what does he do? He has a site where he offers pre-order shoes that have not released yet. And he has listings for shoes that are often way below the marking price and that ship 6 to 8 weeks later or even longer after the release date. He offers everything from hype shoes, like ultra hype shoes, to just regular hype shoes like Dunks and 350s and stuff like that. Some of his shoes he offers a discount for at various different levels. He calls it like bronze to gold, and those are offered in the email list. And the pre-orders are not unlimited. They do sell out. So the restocks often go to email lists, and his site is on Shopify, so a lot of cook groups actually do monitor his site. So he will offer pre-orders for shoes that we know are releasing this year. So some stuff we know based on, you know, the release schedule on what Nike has announced, for example, you know, fall, winter Jordans. And then there's other stuff that, you know, like Zed Sneakerheads and other places will leak out. And for the most part, because their track record is true, we know they're coming out, and he will offer pre-orders for those as well. But, you know, shoes like these yellow toe ones that are supposedly coming out this year, those have been rumored to come out for the last few years. So there might be cases where he offers a pre-order for a shoe that doesn't release for 3 years later. But he might also offer pre-orders for shoes that don't end up releasing. And these are, like I said, the ultra hype stuff like PlayStation Travis, Dunks and stuff like that. So his policy on this site, you know, you can go read the policy if you want. But some of the stuff that he says on there, of course, he says the authenticity is guaranteed, 100% guarantee. There's a big section on cancel fees, and we'll get to why that is a little bit later. There's also a big section about how there's no refunds on pre-orders, only store credit. So stuff like I said, where if a PlayStation Travis Dunk doesn't end up releasing, you might get store credit only for that. And his window is 10 months. You have to wait at least 10 months from the moment that I think it's offered, and 10 months later will he offer site credit. And there's some stuff in there that, you know, if a release changes, like something ends up being sneakers only and he ends up can't getting it, then store credit for those type of releases as well. But one of the things that he does say in there that he works with stores and suppliers. So we'll hold on to that and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But from everything he presents, he runs a legitimate business. And I say the word legitimate in that meaning only that he, you know, he uses Shopify. He uses PayPal only. There's no shady payment processors. There's no like Cash App me this and stuff like that. You know, he's not on Instagram doing raffles. He's got a Better Business Bureau rating, but I'm aware that those things can be bought sometimes. But, you know, even if you go on the site, his site, and then later you go on New York Times, I get ads for Zeta Kicks on New York Times. So that means he's buying up ad space within the Google ad network. So other things, based on what I know, what we've heard about customer service particularly, is that if you ask a lot of questions, if you ask about a refund, or if you want your shoe canceled, you might get banned from his site. You might get your address banned. And because it is PayPal, he will ultimately, I think, refund you. But he's got all these disclaimers on there that you'll have to pay a certain fee. So I think that is for, you know, CYA, cover your ass. You know, but the key questions that we'll try to address and try to take educated guesses on are, where does he get his sneakers from? Why does it take so long? And why doesn't he just resell everything himself and make more money instead of offering it to the public at a cheaper price? In terms of who, I know he's based in Oregon. The company's based in Oregon. I've heard someone say that he previously worked at Nike. I don't know that. I'm not going to investigate if he did. like I said, when there's conspiracies, these are the kind of things where you can say because it makes a lot of sense, but I don't know, but someone out there does. But really, him personally, I'm not going to investigate. I'm kind of a hands-off podcast detective only. But in terms of who's buying, it seems to be a wide range. It's regular sneakerheads, you know, regular in terms of the type who are online and in Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram who trust him, buy from him. There's people in bulk that buy from him, resellers. Some cook groups might, do as well too, and even consignment stores, which makes sense. One of the big questions is where? Where does he get his sneakers from? There are several theories. As I said, in the policy, if you read through, he says he gets it from stores and suppliers. So let's break it down. So the first one, of course, people will assume is that he sells fakes. Natural assumption, because he does these big pre-orders. How else can you get big numbers of this kind of stuff? Obviously, Nike will say if you didn't get it from us or an authorized retailer, then we can't guarantee the authenticity. But from large numbers of people who have bought from him have said that his shoes do pass StockX and GOAT. I know there's certain levels of trust there, especially with StockX. It's probably a little bit higher with GOAT. And eBay, I'm sure, is high as well too. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not fake, but it is a good sign. But for the rest of this conversation, I'm just going to assume that he somehow gets legitimate pairs. So theory number one, as he said, stores and suppliers, he just backdoors them. But, you know, the question is, how does he get them? How does he get that many? If these Chicago ones are going to be super limited, how is he going to get this many? And then he sold hundreds of pre-orders. How is he going to get hundreds and hundreds of pairs? Another theory that I've heard that is probably untrue is that he bought out mom and pop shops that are dying. He kept their account alive, even though the shop is long gone. That seems unlikely. Another theory similar to that is that he skims a few pairs from a ton of places. If you get one or two pairs from hundreds of hundreds of places, that eventually adds up. This is kind of the Superman 2 Office Space theory. My guy on Twitter, CK, named this the Superman Office Space theory. You know, it doesn't sound half bad. It seems like it could work. It seems like a ton of work. It also explains why it takes forever to get all the shoes when you're dealing with hundreds and hundreds of places. But what's kind of assumed here is that he allegedly has deep connections with someone at Nike HQ. And as I said, someone has said that he may have worked there. I don't know. Does he have deep connections there? I don't know. But it makes a lot of sense, conspiracy-wise. You know, what we do know is that there are no distribution centers in Oregon. Those are all in like Memphis and I guess some new ones in LA and other places. There's also no sneaker boutiques in Oregon. There's no Undefeated in Oregon. And I think Nike does that on purpose. Ultimately, I do not know where he gets his sneakers from. He says stores and suppliers. So ultimately, I will take that at face value and say that he does get them from stores and suppliers. How he does, I don't know. For why does it take so long? We kind of covered that in that if he's getting them from, say, factories or from lots of stores and suppliers, it naturally makes sense that it would take time to collect all those shoes long after the release has happened, do an inventory count, see how many you did pre-orders for, and ship the ones that you can and offer store credit for the rest. Another why question, why doesn't Nike stop this? I don't know. They decide who to sue and who not to sue. They sued Geiger. They like suing StockX. But I guess here they have chosen not to sue for now. Of course, the conspiracy theory here is if you are in cahoots with someone high at Nike HQ, then of course you're not going to get sued. You know, I think playing the X-Files theme is just the same as saying allegedly. You know, Nike does have this detective squad. They can buy shoes from consignment stores or resellers on Instagram, scan the RFID, figure out where it came from, where that source was, and then maybe restrict that source, remove them from some releases, whatever they want to do. You know, I'm assuming that for Zeta Kicks that his shoes come without that RFID stuff. Okay, the biggest question is, why doesn't he just sell all the shoes for market price when he gets them? Why is he taking up everyone's money and then holding that money and then shipping way, way later and being prickly in terms of customer service about it? you would assume it would be less work selling it on apps and eBay than it would be to customers who are constantly emailing you about the money that you've held. But, you know, why does he do this? Why does he do it out of the goodness of his heart? No, no one does. The only reason that makes sense is he takes the money that he's getting, he's putting it into something that is more profitable than sneakers, and then, you know, delivers on that promise and keeps it going. Ultimately, the question is this all a Ponzi scheme? Obviously, I'm going to say I do not know, but it has certain hallmarks that it is. Holding the money, not wanting to return the money, being prickly about it. You know, if you think about it, what is a business that requires a lot of capital, is not illegal because of the things I said before. He does everything legitimate, PayPal, Shopify, all that kind of stuff. The only thing that makes any logical sense is if he puts all this money into weed farms. That is something where you may not be able to get federal funding for, so you require a lot of capital. And weed is legal in Oregon, but I will say I do not know if he does this. That is just my educated guess because I can't think of anything else. You know, maybe he puts it all into crypto and NFTs, I don't know. But whatever it is he does with the money, it seems like the ride will keep going on until one day something may happen. And that's the classic earmarks for any Ponzi scheme. You know, what if one day Oregon reverses its laws on marijuana, weed farms? What if federal funding is now available? What if those NFTs got rugged and the money's all gone? And then everything comes crumbling down. But in any case, everything is through PayPal, so buyers should be at least covered by that. But ultimately, with people like this, they do it because they can. He has the connections. He has the ability to get the shoes. He has generated the trust with enough people that they will give him money, so that is why he does it. But to wrap this all up, we just don't know all the details. We can't know. Someone out there knows. Someone in Oregon knows. And really, I kind of like not knowing. I like that there's a mystery that I can't completely solve. I can take educated guesses, but there's just parts that I understand that I'm not going to understand. So really, if you want to buy sneakers from him, that is the main point. Are you happy not knowing? Or is this the kind of thing that would drive you nuts? So I said I'm not endorsing him, but really what I'm saying is only buy from this kind of stuff if it suits your personality type. If you ask a lot of questions, you need lots of picks, and don't trust the legitimacy of these sneakers, this is going to be a bad experience for you. It's not going to go well. And from the most part, it seems like a lot of people have had a positive experience dealing with Zetakicks. You know, there's people who bought, you know, University Blue Ones or Lightning Fours, and they delivered whatever it is 3-4 months later. And some have had bad experiences, and that could be related to customer service. Or they could be because you bought a whole bunch of bulk Travis Fragment Ultra Hype shoes and he couldn't deliver on those. You know, if you just don't have the patience for this kind of stuff, it's probably not for you. You know, I've heard in some of the Twitter replies that some people are still waiting for their cool grays to be shipped and others have got them delivered. But on the other hand, I'm more of the type of set it and forget it. You know, knowing that it'll arrive later, you can completely forget about it. And it's when it does arrive, it's like a present to yourself from the past version of yourself. Disclosure, I forgot to say this in the beginning of this thing, which I should have, that I did pre-order those Chicago ones during that weekend when he had the sale for it. And because they were cheap enough, if it was $400, $500, I probably wouldn't have done it. You know, if the shoe comes out and it's totally different than what we've been told, I'm okay with that. The $200 is not big of a deal, but that's probably because I already have Chicago One, so, you know, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. So at the end of the day, do what's right for you, know who you are, and don't dive into something where you know it's going to be a pain in the ass for you personally. So thank you for listening to the Sock Jake Sneaker Podcast. I've said it all. The truth is still out there. We solved a bunch of mysteries. You know, maybe I was sneaker Scooby-Doo this whole time. I don't know. But one thing I absolutely forgot to mention, and I had already recorded almost all of the podcasts, but in my research, when I was coming up with this, I uncovered something pretty huge that, you know, not enough people are talking about. And there's a lot of people involved, and you're a key part of this. So it's something that you can be doing right now to help. And that is to go fuck yourself.